Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yes, good afternoon. How's the form? What is the crack? It is just after, six minutes past three. You can keep me company for the next hour and a half. 51551 for your texts or ray@rte.ie. I was reading earlier that cinemas are opening back up tomorrow with reduced capacity, obviously. 2 metre social distancing is required. And that means it's a big drop. Like, it's probably 25% of their seats just being able to be occupied for most cinemas. Which is tough. Of course, they're going to need to sell an awful lot of popcorn for that. The Omniplex plans to open 7 of their cinemas tomorrow: Cork, Rathmines, Limerick, Galway, Wexford, Arklow, and a new cinema in Drogheda. And do you know what? It's good, because I was thinking, for a lot of when it's a rainy, miserable few days forecast, that'll be the one place the cinemas will benefit from that, whereas a lot of others won't. So good news for them on rainy days. And with a lack of releases, it's the classic films that are going to bridge the gap. For example, in the Omniplex in Rathmines tomorrow, they're showing, well, not classics in the classic sense of the word, but they're showing The Greatest Showman, The Joker, The Lego Movie, The Conjuring. So that might be an idea for a rainy afternoon or a rainy evening. I love the cinema, I have to say. And myself and Pork were just talking about it. Like, I've missed it because we would go, well, maybe once a month, and just to get out of the house and, you know, something nice to do midweek. But I don't know, like, you know, it goes dark. It's that silence just before the movie starts and someone goes up the back. I mean, the rustling of the crisps and people chomping on Doritos would sound like birdsong comparatively. But let me know, are you ready for the cinema? 2 metres social distancing. Let me know, 51551. And what are the classics? What would you like to go and see on the big screen? There's a lot of 90s nostalgia coming back. Drive-in movies are also an alternative that somebody texted me about. They retro drive-ins are operating. 3 drive-ins, Leopardstown, Slane and Kilkenny. They are all up and running and massively popular. In their Leopardstown venue, you can go and see The Wolf of Wall Street tomorrow evening. That's a great date. I haven't done it here. I've done it in the States, never done it here. So I think, yeah, get your designated driver. That's very important. Stick the bottle of Prosecco in the handbag. Bob's your uncle, Fanny's your aunt. Date night sorted. Speaking of classics, we had The Den and Zig and Zag, of course, making a comeback. I won't put Ray in the classics bracket there. They all made a comeback at the weekend. They're not the only ones. Does anyone remember Beavis and Butthead? Yes, the gruesome twosome, the MTV pop culture phenomenon of the 90s. They are back to Comedy Central, and it's the original team, the original creator, Mike Judge, back at the helm. Let me know, did you watch them? They were all around me at the time. I never got into it, but everybody I knew, there was movies and t-shirts and Beavis and Butthead on constantly on MTV. I mean, it was a mega, mega franchise. And I think that back in 1996, they had an 8 or 10 million budget, and the film that came out at the time, I even went to see it, grossed 63 million back in the day. But anyway, here's a bit more of the gruesome twosome.
I'm gonna die. Oh no.
This is emergency 911. What's the emergency?
Beavis is bleeding.
You're calm, sir. That's good. Now, can you tell me, where is your friend wounded?
His nose?
He's bleeding from his nose. Is it broken?
No. It's just, like, leaking.
Your friend has a nosebleed. A nosebleed is not an emergency.
Don't worry, Beavis. It's not an emergency.
That's nice.
Yes, that will be on our TV screens very soon as well, so that to look forward to. Zoom calls, it's big. There's another one of those interrupted Zoom calls. And I think many people who've gone back to work, do you agree with me? One of the bonuses of going back to work is no more Zoom calls. I mean, I know they were necessary and brilliant and people are still using them, and we're Zooming and FaceTiming and Microsoft Teaming. And we couldn't have gotten through, for a lot of companies, we couldn't got through without them. But geez, they are taxing. And as all parents working from home can attest to, not very childproof. There's another clip doing the rounds today. Dr. Claire Wenham, she is a global health expert from the London School of Economics. She was live on BBC News, clearly talking about the pandemic, something that 2-year-old daughter Scarlett had absolutely no interest in. Couldn't care about the global pandemic. She was much more interested in finding out where her picture should go on a shelf.
Data now, so we don't have this problem again.
What's your daughter called?
She's called Scarlett.
Scarlett, I think it looks better on the lower shelf. And it's a lovely unicorn. It's a lovely unicorn. Okay, so obviously... And do stop me if you need to crack on. Do tell us.
What's his name?
My name is Christian.
His name is Christian.
Christian.
Yes.
Just deciding where it can go and where Mummy wants it to go.
Oh, right. Where does Mummy want it to go?
I think just on that shelf is great. Thank you. I'm so sorry.
This is the most informative interview I've done all day.
Oh, I just think I love the innocence of children. It's just brilliant. Let me know if you have had any embarrassing moments on Zoom or the conversation that I've had with a lot of my girlfriends, the biggest fear that you have, because we've all done the Zoom calls, let's call a spade dressed from the waist up. And the only embarrassing thing that happened to me, I was doing a workshop and it was through Zoom, but it was streaming live into Facebook. Somebody set it up for me. Don't ask me. Anyway, I thought I pressed end. Clearly I didn't. And I carried the laptop all the way down the stairs, left it on the counter. So you couldn't see me in it, but you could still hear me. And I proceeded to tell my husband how the whole thing went. Thankfully, it was a very positive workshop and I had nothing negative to say. But I was there making dinner, pouring a glass of wine. And it was only then when my friend texted me to say, "You're still live on Facebook." So, yes, we could have had a more horrible outcome, but thankfully it didn't. So, Dave, are you coming in here? We're going to do the All-Ireland quiz. This is, let me grab my, we don't have anyone from KPMG. So Dave has just come in now to make sure I'm doing it right. How many counties have we got in there? We have 8 counties. Okay. So after quite a nerve-wracking episode yesterday when we nearly lost one of our players, it was Aidan, wasn't it? He eventually came to represent his county, Tipperary. But we are in the next stage of the competition and the first county is County Kildare and that is Mary Carter. And Kildare will be playing Antrim. Dan Carlin representing Antrim. So that is today, Kildare and Antrim. Mary Carter and Dan Carlin. Get your thinking caps on. We will be in touch with you very shortly. We then have Louth. Bernard Curley from Louth is going to be playing against... Aidan McIntyre from Tipperary, who's probably back on the golf course again. But we don't need him today, so that's not a problem. Then it's Cavan, Patricia McMahon versus... Wicklow, Lorraine Bailey. And finally, we have Waterford's John Kiley representing Waterford versus Colette Bailey and Down. So let me go through that again. We have Kildare and Antrim today, and that's Mary Carter and Dan Carlin. We have Louth versus Tipperary. That's Bernard Curley, Aidan McIntyre, Cavan, Patricia McMahon and Wicklow's Lorraine Bailey and Waterford's John Kiley and Colette Bailey representing Down. Next stage of the competition. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to that later on. Let's get some tunes. Paloma Faith there. We were talking about movies. Catherine, I'd love to see Down and Out in Beverly Hills starring Nick Nolte and Bette Midler. Love this movie. Mid-80s, I think. My hubby and I haven't seen it in a while now. That's the thing, because it is a real opportunity to go and go back and enjoy the classics, but in a public place. Getting out, supporting the cinemas, supporting the drive-thrus as well. Please wish our beautiful daughter Siobhan Austin in Dervot's townhouse in County Meath a very happy 47th birthday today and a huge thank you for a fabulous dinner last night in the Darnley Hotel in Athboy. Love and hugs, Mick and Mam from Sally Noggin. There you go. Nice dinner out as well. Probably the first for you guys. So glad that you enjoyed it. After the break, I'm going to be talking to two barbers to see how things are going for them. Paddy Joe Burke and the fabulous Lorraine O'Neill up in Cavan. Back in a few. Now, we've been checking in with businesses all over the country since the reopening on Monday. And of course, hairdressers and barbers, we're still talking about them. They have been open since then. So we thought we'd check in with our barber friends, Paddy Joe Burke in Roscommon and Lorraine O'Neill in Cavan. Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, Lorraine.
Hello, how are you doing?
Lorraine, how are you? I'm going to start with you. How are you, my dear?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, listen, flying it. Absolutely flying it, thank God. Great to chat to you. And of course, I've been keeping up with you on Instagram. And during the lockdown, you were teaching every man how to cut and feather blade and blade and whatever you do. But how was Monday for you?
Well, on Monday was grand. Once we got in, on Sunday night, I couldn't sleep with nerves because, I don't know, it's just the unknown. Mm. But once we got in on Monday, it was 100% busy, very busy. And we're using an appointment system, which we never used. So people are getting used to that. So, yeah, it was busy, but great. Great to get back in.
And you had done a big job, if I remember correctly, on the salon only last or 2 years ago now. So have you had to adjust and take seats out? How are you working?
No, well, we only done the job in January.
That's right, yeah. I've lost track of time myself.
Yeah, but it was no January we did. Thank God, because it leaves the place very new and very clean already. Do you know the way when it's all new and fresh? Mm. So, no, we didn't take any chairs out, but we're only using two instead of three. So I have three chairs.
Yeah.
So we're using one and three. We're leaving two empty, which is great. You know, leaving number two station empty. So it's great. Like, it just leaves. I think the salon, I could actually allow three cutting, but at the minute and for week one, I'm just letting two.
Okay.
So just two of them.
And how many hours are you going to put in this week?
Oh, God. So I'm doing 12-hour shifts. The girls are doing six each. So it's eight to two, and then 2 to 8 is what the girls are doing, and I'm doing 8 to 8.
Okay.
I'm sure it's not finishing at that. Like, last night I was here till 9:30, and the night before that I was there till 10:00, and it's just not finishing at that. But it's great.
Yeah.
It's lovely to be back. I can't complain. I've been off for 15 or 16 weeks. I can't even remember. So, like, I can't complain.
And how have all your gang, how are they holding up and managing with the appointments? Because yours was a real place where you walk in, you throw the bag down, you sit down for the chat, and you're seen when you're seen. And that was kind of part of it. Whereas now you have people, do you have the queue outside the door? Everyone's social distancing?
No, I have none of that.
Okay.
I have an appointment system going. So, no, everybody knows their time. There's people coming in with walk-ins, and we can say, okay, give us, you know, an hour. Maybe it could be the next day. But we're getting everybody sorted. And no, it's running very smooth, I have to say. Everything is running nice and smooth the way I want it. But the 12-hour opening is helping that.
Yeah. And come here, with Mia, your daughter, obviously, and just to remind people, we know each other from Operation Transformation.
We do.
And your daughter, Mia, she has CF. And I know you so well, you're not going to be taking any risks. But, and obviously more so now, were you more nervous going back to work because of that?
Yeah, it added to it, yeah. I'm not going to say that it took away from it. It definitely did add to it.
Mm.
But you have to be, like, I am very careful anyway. I'm very careful. When it comes to me, I don't take any risks. I'm never going to take risks. But it's just like, you know, doing everything right, like keeping everything right in here. So we have, like, there's no not doing things right in the salon. So when I go home in the evenings, I feel very confident that we've done everything in our power to keep COVID away from us. So I can walk into the house, you know, take off my clothes, wash my hands, you know, clear myself down as far as the way I would be concerned, and then I can go near Mia.
Okay.
So I'm not taking any risks, but I've never taken any risks. You know, a lot of the CF life is very COVID-like.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be careful all
anyway.
The time.
And are you doing that? Are you stripping off at the door and taking the shoes off and the whole thing?
The utility room, yeah?
Yeah. Standing at the new
I'm not outside, the neighbours would be staring at me, so better not do that.
I wouldn't put it past you. Paddy Jo Burke in Roscommon, how are you doing, sir?
Oh, Catherine, great, and thanks for having me on your show, and it's nice to talk to you again, Catherine. The last time you and I were talking on the radio was the day after the Connacht final.
That's correct. That's correct.
And that was some day.
That was some day. And I'd say Monday came a very close second, Paddy, being open finally. What did it feel like being back at work?
It was lovely, as Lorraine said there. Now I can identify with what she was saying. Like, it was lovely coming back to work, Catherine, after being off for so long.
Yeah.
But I was excited coming back. I live in Ballymoat, and I'm, you know, I was enjoying the drive to Roscommon. It's 44 miles, and it was great to get back into the barber shop, and great to get meeting all the men again and hearing the stories, and you know, just you know, to be back. And Catherine, you know what was lovely about Monday?
What?
To see the men in the chair so happy. To see the hair falling off their head down onto the floor.
Mm.
And some of them was nearly actually doing a running commentary as I was cutting the hair. They were so thankful, they were so appreciative, and they were so happy to see their hair coming down on the floor. And to think that you could make someone that happy by just giving them a haircut. Now, I'm a long time cutting hair, Catherine.
Yeah.
And I never realised that the barber is as important a member in the community as he was on last Monday, which was a lovely day in the shop to see them all so happy.
Well, I can't wait. My fella is gone off today. He's off work. He's taken the day off. And yes, 3:20 is actually his hair appointment. Now, he was going around like something out of I don't know what. I kept calling him, saying it was distinguished. Jeez, lads, it was shocking. And when he gets back now, he's going to be coiffed. He's going to keep the length in it, but I'm so excited to see him. But he has been living for this as well. And you forget, because you're so consumed, the women, you know, Lorraine, I know with you, and I got my hair done on Monday. But
the fellas are gorgeous.
Thank you. But the fellas are, and you know, with the beard and the whole thing, I mean, he's so looking forward to it. And like you were saying, Paddy Joe, it does give the fellas a new lease of life, sitting back in the chair again.
Oh, they were absolutely delighted to get their hair cut, you know, and it was lovely now, you know, and it was great to be back. As Lorraine was saying there, we had a long break.
Yeah.
And, you know, people would be saying that we were missing, you know, well, people are saying that they were missing the barber, but I can assure you that the barber was missing the men in the chair as well.
Mm.
You know,
and you know,
just lovely to be back. Like,
do you know what really stuck with me? I was talking to Noel Cunningham yesterday up in Donegal, and he was saying it was sort of eerie walking back into the empty hotel. This was before they opened, and he was walking through the corridors and walking through the empty bar. And I'd say you guys have had that experience as well, going into the shop and having it empty when it's so full of life. And Lorraine, I know yours is on the main street in Cavan, and it's such a place of buzz and excitement always, because they're generally small but always full of life.
Yeah, and it wasn't nice walking into it when it was empty. And like, I went in maybe April, May, and it was sad. It was actually sad that your door was closed. But you look at, you know, it is what it is. We had to get used to it. We did get used to it. And like, now being back, like, it is great. I'm enjoying the whole crack this week. Like, and like, you know, you kind of get used to barbers and hairdressers. Like, we're so used to yap, 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 talking all the time. And there for a while, we stop talking. And like, that is like a foreign body. Like, it doesn't work with us. It doesn't sit with us well. So now we're getting back yapping again. Like, it's great. It's great. My jaws are sore.
And Paddy Jo, how are you doing with the shields and the masks and the social distancing in there? And I feel for the hairdressers as well, with the big plastic shields down in front of their face, trying to concentrate on cutting and no more than yourselves.
Yeah. God, Catherine, you know, now, like, with all the euphoria about being back, really, there's a real serious side. You know, the virus hasn't gone away. And we need all to be careful, and, you know, we need to take the precaution. Can I just make a suggestion, please, to anyone going to the barber for a haircut? Would they please bring a mask with them? You know, because we need to realise that this virus has not gone away, and we need to be careful and follow the instructions. But if we do now, like, I'm lucky here now with the layout of the shop, the chair is at one side, and the waiting area is, you know, I'm able to get in three chairs into the waiting area, which is grand. But we just need to follow the instructions, and we need to be careful, Catherine, and we need to keep washing and sanitizing, and everyone wear a mask. And if we do the right thing, well, the right thing will happen.
Yeah.
But we need to be conscious of the new normal now for us all.
Did you hear, Paddy Jo, you were called emerging artists there on social media? Yeah. Bringing people back to rights, turning them around.
Very good.
I love it.
Our title could be changing every day. It could be a different title tomorrow, Catherine.
So I tell you one thing.
We'd have a new title every day, so we would.
Well, I wish you both the best. So lovely to catch up with you again, Lorraine and Paddy Jo. And fair play to you, getting everybody feeling good again. And that's what it's about when we've gone through such a difficult time. We all still have to work together, as you said, Paddy Jo. But great to see you back up and open, lads. And best of luck for, let's hope it's a busy weekend for you as well. And try and get some sleep at some point.
We wish you the best of luck, Lorraine. And nice talking to you, Catherine. And thanks very much.
You too. Thanks a million, guys.
Thanks, guys.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, keep your texts coming into 51551 and you can send me an email to ray@rte.ie. Now, I'm joined in studio by someone who is absolutely no stranger to the show at this stage, Claire Fulham. Great to see you.
Thank you.
Also known as Claire Balding.
Yes.
To thousands of people who follow you on social media. I've not met you before, mm-hmm. so lovely to see you. And also sitting beside you is Claire's husband, Ian O'Byrne. First time on the show for you.
This is my first time.
First time, okay. So it is, it's a real family affair.
Yeah.
And it's not, we can't have guests generally together. So yeah. You guys obviously from the same
unit. Unfortunately, we live together, Catherine. Yeah. So we have to
kind of try to quarantine for each other.
How has lockdown been for you?
We have two small kids. We have 9 and 5 year olds. And like, that's not the worst, can I just say. Like, they're grand, you know, but it's been testing. Yeah. I think like everybody else, it's just, you feel sorry for them because they can't socialise. And you feel sorry for yourself because you can't socialise. But Ian works in a primary school as well. So Ian's facing into basically another lockdown until September. So good luck with that.
Oh my God.
I know, but it's been tough for everybody, I think. But I think we're starting to see, hopefully, some light at the end of the tunnel.
See some light, yeah. Absolutely. Well, listen, we are going to talk about your new business venture, and which is great. I love hearing new business stories that, you know, especially when things are so difficult for people. But let's just go back for people who haven't heard your story. I know you've been on, you were on with Ray before and you were on with Baz as well. But talk to us about, you were an alopecia sufferer.
Yeah.
And I don't know, do you say you were or you are?
I think you say you are, yeah, you are. Because I think it's something that comes and goes. Do you know, it's like one of my stress triggers, really, unfortunately. Now, the first time I got it, so yeah, 4 years ago, I lost 85% of my hair within 3 weeks. So it was kind of coin-shaped marks all over the scalp, which is kind of a real trait of alopecia areata is what it's called. So there's loads of different types of alopecias. So I was in a wig within 3 weeks. I had hair quite similar to what I have today. Thank God it's all back now, which is amazing. But within the 3 weeks, really, I kind of lost myself completely. It's very difficult to physically see yourself change so quickly as well. And no real answer for it or reason why, you know, that was the most difficult part.
And if you don't mind me saying, like, you have an amazing mop of red hair.
Yeah.
It's stunningly beautiful. And, you know, I'm not somebody who's ever had good hair. I've always had sort of very weak hair and very fine hair. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have friends who have big heads of hair. And do you know who I'm thinking of now? Sumi on Operation Transformation.
Oh,
the doctor's on that. She has the most beautiful head of hair.
Yeah.
Not that it defines her, but every time I think of her, I think of that. And you probably, you know, with a head of hair like that you have, with that beautiful red hair, it was something, it was your sort of crowning glory.
It was like,
was
you know,
it?
Claire with the red hair. So it wasn't like Claire Fulham or, you know, it was like, you know, Claire with the red hair. And that was the way like everyone kind of described me growing up, or, you know, so it was a tough one. And I think, I suppose, when you rely on such a physical feature, which we do, we hide behind things and we're all
totally
of it, for that to then disappear, it's really difficult to look in the mirror and even see that person again. You can't see yourself. You don't recognise yourself. All of a sudden, my eyebrows started to go as well. And as I said, so quickly was such kind of a shock to the system, you know. And then I went for treatment. I went to visit a trichologist in Dublin, went for treatment, did treatment for a number of weeks. I think it was 20 weeks altogether. But within the 8th week of doing treatment, my hair started to come back.
Okay.
And it was very much, I started to kind of get into a deep depression, if I'm going to be honest. It was difficult for me to go to work. It was difficult for me to get out of the bed. I had 2 young kids. Thank God Ian was there and he was so reliable and was able to cook a meal.
Well, Ian,
I'm
going to bring
tough.
You in there because to see your wife going through that, and obviously to see the, not just the physical effects, but the emotional and the mental effects that it took on her. How was that for you? And because if it is stress related, obviously you're kind of trying to keep everything as stress free as possible.
It was an extremely hard time because you're so unable to help, really, as well. And all you can do is put a hand on someone's back and go, well, we're all here for you, and just to put a meal on the table or whatever. But you're seeing someone fall apart in front of you, and there's very little that you can do, and there's only so many times someone wants to hear, well, you're still beautiful to me, or the hair is not what I fell in love with, or anything like that. So
thank God.
But it almost is like you had to get okay with it before everybody else. So even Ian probably telling you those things that you look gorgeous. And because you guys were childhood sweethearts as well, right?
We're together since we're 18. So 15 years this year,
she
we'll be together.
She said no to me a few times.
I did, yeah. I bat him off.
What was it about her, Ian, back then?
Well, I'd love to say it was the hair, but she actually had it dyed black at that point.
I went through a phase.
Black and straightened. no, we were just like, she was and still is beautiful. And but we were really we were really good friends, and we'd go to parties and we'd go off. We'd be
sitting
somewhere having a chat for hours, and
all our friends back. Did you just kiss each other?
Definitely kissed each other.
And we were like, no,
but it
had,
didn't happen. She kept saying no, but then eventually, yeah, like it cracked the
you
nuts.
You wore her down. So back to you, Claire, trying to deal with it, trying to come to terms with it, and you were reassured by a specialist that you'd seen mm-hmm. that it would grow back. Did you believe them when those words came out of their mouth?
I suppose it kind of gave me a sense of relief in that moment. You know, I was like, okay, but how bad is it going to get? And she's like, it's going to get worse before it's going to get better. You will probably lose a lot of hair. Now, I think I shocked them. I kind of broke the mold a little bit because I lost a huge amount of hair. Most people who have alopecia areata have two or three spots on their head, or patches is what they're called. And they're able to hide them with the rest of their hair. They're able to style their hair a certain way. I wouldn't see them more. In men as well, I don't know if sometimes you notice a circular grey or white patch on a man's head, normally at the back of the head. And that again is a patch of alopecia areata that we wouldn't have seen or really noticed, and then it grows back, and most of the time it grows back white or stressed or grey. So a lot of the time, you know, you're not supposed to lose that much hair when you have that type of alopecia, but as I said, I kind of broke the mold in that. So when it got very, very bad, I think there was a bit more. Now we don't know, we can't guarantee anything, of course they can't, but it was nice to hear that. But I didn't really believe her in that instance. But again, like, look at me now, I've loads of hair back, thank God. But within the 8th week of treatment, I noticed it coming back. And it was funny, that day when I went in for treatment, I didn't want to. I was so depressed, I was so sad, I was so vulnerable, you know. I didn't want to peel off my wig and sit there and stare at myself in the mirror while getting my treatment done. I didn't want to put my wig back on, walk down Dame Street, get on the 123. I didn't want to do it that day. And I remember I was like, Claire, snap yourself out of this. If you've no hair for the rest of your life, you're still going to be okay. You can walk, you can talk, you've got two gorgeous kids, a gorgeous husband. You're really going to have to cop on now. And that day I went in and I sat there and I peeled off the wig. I'm fine, and the usual stuff I do. And she, give me your phone. And she showed me all of this brand new white baby hair all over my head. And I could put money, €1 million on it if I had it, that there was no hair there that day. And that kind of relinquishing that, and that kind of going, do you know what, Claire, just let it go. Because when you struggle, sometimes it's okay just to put a lid on it then, and he didn't win that fight, and go on and fight something else. And that the instant I did that, everything changed. My hair came back within weeks. A new lease of life I had again. And it was slowly but surely becoming Claire again. I'd lost her completely, but I could see a little spark coming back. And it's taken me 4 years for really that to happen. And so much has happened within those 4 years that, you know, it's been a struggle at times. But I really felt like I never knew what I wanted to be when I grew up, but now I do. Mm. And it's because of that horrible time I went through, you know.
So in terms of the stress, because let's talk about stress, because there's a lot of people out there, and I know, and I'm kind of careful and I'm mindful, because there's different types of alopecia, and the treatments that you went on did, and the products that you used, like the combination of lots of different things worked for you. But do you believe that it was actually just accepting and and relinquishing and relieving your stress of the body, and that you were putting yourself under as well, was part of that?
Yeah, 100%. I think I could have been sitting getting my treatments, you know, now still. I think I'd be sitting there with my wig. If I had just kept that wig on me and just not learned to accept that it was okay not to have hair, I wouldn't have any now. I really truly believe that. And no lotion or potion or no treatment will work for one person. But what I think it does do is great advice, but honest advice, and a point in the right direction, and almost a to feel proactive, to feel like I'm doing something for my hair today. That gives you an awful lot of kind of sense of calm, I suppose, a little bit as well. So, but unfortunately, we put thousands into my hair trying to get it back. And if I had it just left it alone, I probably still would have had hair if I got to that acceptance point. But I needed to spend a bit of money to get there, to understand that actually, hair or no hair, I'm going to be okay. But I think all the steps that I took to get there, of course I needed to go through that as well. I think it's a process. But 100%, I think that if I hadn't have accepted it, which is easier said than done.
Yeah, because I was just going to say, all we've been doing all week is, and me included, talking about getting into, or for the last couple of weeks, getting into the hairdressers and feeling, you know, getting the colour done, getting rid of the roots, getting rid of the greys, the whole thing, and feeling good, because everybody who goes to the hairdressers knows that feeling.
Yeah.
But what you're saying as well is that you reached a point where you understood that not letting anything physical define you, like not, you know, getting rid of all the guilt and the shame, like that's a massive lesson to learn. It's a very hard lesson to learn, mm-hmm. but an amazing lesson to learn.
Oh, absolutely. Don't carry me like that with me forever, you know? And I think we always talk about it as well, which is really funny. Farah, our daughter, was only 5 when it was happening. And I was like, she remembers, you know? And she used to scoop up my hair and stuff and hide it on me and put it in the bin for me. And I remember we were watching, she was doing Shrek, the musical. And I remember saying to her, like, sometimes, you know, it doesn't matter what you look like. And Princess Fiona, he kept like comparing me to Princess Fiona. And it was just really like, it doesn't matter what you look like. And, you know, Catherine, like us women, our boobs will sag, we'll get wrinkles, our hair will fall out, our hair will thin, but you're still Claire and Catherine and Ian and everybody else. And I really found that no one around me worth their salt cares whether I have hair or not. They just love me for who I am. And that's a huge, really difficult, as you said, to have to go through that lesson ever. But it's taught me so much, you know, and how to appreciate others and how to, it doesn't matter what you look like. It's about how you treat others. That's what they'll remember you for, not your gorgeous hair, you know. So it's a hard lesson, but the best lesson.
You are training to be a trichologist.
Yeah.
That is brilliant. So there's 7 trichologists in the country.
Mm-hmm.
These are, now they're obviously, tell me what an actual trichologist it is and what, how do you become one? How long does it take? What does it involve?
Okay, so trichologist is a specialist and they look after the scalp and in particular hair loss. So there is only very, very few trichologists in Ireland. The reason being, I was like, why is there so little? Then I started doing the course. I was like, all right, that's why, because the course is really hard. So it's expensive. You do it online or you go to London as well. So it depends on kind of what way you choose to do it. So I'm opening a business. I've got 2 kids. I'm running a house. We're doing everything else. So it's kind of a bit mad. So I can't.
And how much is the course?
It's to travel as well comes about €10,000. So it's very expensive, you know. I'm actually getting help from Image Skillnet. So I have to give them a little shout out. They help kind of people within the industry, in the beauty industry as well, when they're trying to kind of upscale and stuff. So always get on to them if you're looking to do a course, Image Skillnet. But they're giving me a little proportion of the course and stuff, which is really fantastic and really helps us, you know. But yeah, the course is, it can be done over 4 years, it can be done over 2 years, it can even be done in 6 months if you really gave it that. So when Corona hit, I was like, I'm going to have this course done. It's going to be grand. I'm going to have it all done. I do have most of it. I just thought there'd be so much more time there to do it. You know what I mean? But then 2 kids and it's just been harder than I expected, you know.
But the idea is that you being a qualified trichologist, I know you're already a scalp specialist, but you're setting up a company, the two of you together, called Trua.
Yes.
Which means compassion.
Yeah.
And what is the basis of the business? So it's not a hairdresser's, because you were involved in hairdressers before, but this is solely for people who have alopecia, is it?
It's solely for people with hair problems, and scalp issues. Yeah. So whether that be hair loss, whether that be psoriasis, dermatitis of the scalp, whether that be hair breakage, you know, so they get into, it's not just the scalp that's trichologists study, it's the hair as well and the bonds of the hair and how they grow and why they don't grow and all that kind of stuff. So really what this will be is a one-stop shop. I remember when I was going through hair loss, I'd have to go get my wig, I had to get my eyebrows tattooed on because they all fell off. Then I had to go to a trichologist. Then I had to go to my GP for this. Then I had to go to counselling for this. Then I had to go to so many places. And every time I went to the next person, I had to explain my story all over again, which was heartbreaking to me, you know, and have to do that. So I was like, why isn't there this one-stop shop for it, you know? So I'll be the trichologist there, the main trichologist. We're going to have private rooms for everybody. I'm going to do wig fittings, micropigmentation, like tattooed eyebrows, eyelashes. Because a lot of women and men who go through a hair loss, they suffer with their eyebrows and their eyelashes and all that kind of stuff. Scalp pigmentation too. So tiny little tattooed dots along the scalp line to kind of, I suppose, fill in the gaps of thinning hair and all that kind of thing. Treatments for hair loss as well. So loads of different types of treatments for hair loss depending on what hair loss you have, you know.
I think it's a brilliant
idea. Yeah.
And how many people, I don't know if you guys know, like I know there's so many different types of alopecia, but how many people suffer with it in Ireland?
In terms of globally in women, it's 3 in 5 will suffer from some form of hair loss in their life.
Okay.
And then it goes to, you know, a little bit less when it comes to alopecia and stuff. But alopecia is any sort of hair loss. So after baby, a lot of women lose a lot of hair. And this would be a place for them to come and just get the really good advice, tell them exactly what should be going on and kind of set them on road and on track for that.
Okay.
But I wanted somewhere completely, you don't have to go anywhere else.
So right now, Ian, the business is online because you guys are in business together. Are you giving up the day job to do this as well? No, so you're just supporting your both business directors.
I'm like the dog's body, really. But I know the difference between a purifying shampoo and a balancing shampoo now.
I'd imagine at the business meetings or sitting down together, do you get a word in edgeways?
No, not really. No. My job is to pack bags and to make sure they're bubble wrapped as they go out.
He does it so well.
But it is, it's for the two of you, it's a kind of a nerve-wracking time. I mean, anybody setting up a business like this, but when you're taking a risk, and you always take a risk setting up a new business, you've got two kids, you've got a mortgage to pay. How are you feeling with all of that in terms of pressure as well?
Everything was fine, and then COVID-19 hit. So when we took the step off the cliff, it was back in January, and then that was a risk anyway in itself. Yeah. And then obviously this hit, and so it's kind of put a slower approach on it. But in a way that hasn't been bad, because it's given us time to catch our tails as well and get the website up and running, which is doing really well at the moment. And there's lots of orders going through, so that's been great.
So when do you think you'll be open for business?
We hope.
I know you're open for business online, and we'll put that out as well.
We hope September, October. We hope. So that's with everything going well and there isn't all these second waves and everything else that we're hearing about. So hopefully September, October.
Okay.
Please God, yeah.
Lovely to meet you both.
Thank you.
A force to be reckoned
with. Thank you very much.
And I love that you're childhood sweethearts. Smile on my face. Thanks a million, guys.
Thanks
for Trua. What's the website?
Truahair.ie.
Truahair. T-R-U-A hair.ie.
Thank you.
Well done, guys.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, keep your texts coming in, 51551, and your emails, ray@rte.ie. GAA clubs opened back up all over the country this week to the relief of many parents, but let's call a spade, to many sports-starved kids as well. And it goes without saying, those clubs are the heart of every community. For generations, we've all heard stories down through the years of local rivalries, club rivalries, glory matches, hero players, turncoats and the like. Well, a new venture has been launched to try and get these stories written down and published in a book to remember some of our grassroots GAA moments. PJ Cunningham, along with the GAA, is behind it, and he joins me on the line now. How are you doing, PJ?
Good afternoon, Catherine. How are you?
I'm very good, sir. Not a bother at all. So do you hail from a GAA stronghold yourself?
I do indeed. I come from Clara County, Offaly, and I played football with them there, or at least tried to play football with them, as people down there would tell you, until I was close on 40.
Right.
And I'm from the same club as Shane Lowry.
Yes.
In fact, I saw him the last time I was in a county final was 93, and he was a little boy. And his mommy, the very funny thing about it was his daddy was from Forbran and his mommy is from Clara, and both the teams met in the county final. And guess whose colours he was dressed up in? You're right, it was the mother's colours, the black and white of Clara.
Well, my hubby lived in Clara for some time as well, actually. He's an awfully man.
I knew his dad well, a member of the law.
Yes.
Great man.
Yeah, God rest him.
He kept it. I'll tell you one thing, he kept us all in our place. Saugard, McLaughlin, Cumann.
So
we,
I heard.
We straightened our homes very, very quickly.
So I heard. So listen, the GAA, the interest in the GAA goes, you know, way back to when you could walk then. That's the case for you.
No, yeah, absolutely, Catherine. The funny thing about the GAA, I remember pledging unflinching loyalty to the GAA the day my father died, because they put the white jerseys on them and they marched down either side of the hearse with them. And I just said, like, anyone that'll do that for a family deserves your loyalty forever, you know. Mm-hmm. And look, I grew up in a place that's full of Shanachies and raconteurs and great storytellers, and often listen to them in Cowan's pub down in River Street, you know. Mm. And I've often been wondering now. That's not to say the GAA did a great job about 10 years ago. They had what you would call academic historic research with, you know, doing their own oral history project with proper researchers like Arlene Cramsey and Regina Fitzpatrick. And there are people out there like Paul Rouse. And these are proper historians. Now, I'm not that. And when I asked Alan Milton in the GAA, he knew that what I was looking for is just the odd story, you know, the one with a little bit of roguery in it, one with a little bit of fun and games, one maybe with passion, one with sadness. You know, there's, aside from the hurling and football, Catherine, I really think the storytelling is the greatest currency that the GAA has. And, you know, the funny thing is, In the week that's in it, when Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are back in government together, what lands on my desk yesterday from a man called Mike Monaghan in North Cork? A story about two villages side by side. One club was totally Fianna Fáil, one club was totally Fine Gael. And I won't say which was which, but one club was playing in a big match and the other said, why don't we ambush them on the way, delay them so that they lose the match. Now, as in all thing, of course, local in terms of grassroots and the GEA, there's always a double agent somewhere. So the double agent told the other club, says, you guys are going to be ambushed on Sunday morning on your way to the match.
He had a foot in both camps.
He had a foot in both camps. So what happened was the lads in the lorry, as they were going to the match, about 100 yards away from where they were about to be ambushed, they leapt out of the lorry with their hurls and in like military people, they marched the rest of the way, swinging the hurls, almost daring the other people to come and down and attack them. Now, that is a story. But in the week where the portraits of Michael Collins and De Valera are in the Taoiseach's office side by side, I wonder what those people who have survived from that think of the way the world has changed. And that's, look, the GEA is a microcosm for the way we live our life in Ireland. That's exactly what I'm trying to get, you know, the little stories. And what I want to do with them is, for the first time, put them in a collection, Catherine, so that they're in a book, so that they're there for posterity. And anything we don't use, that we'll put them in, like was put in before with the oral histories. We'll put those stories into Croke Park, into the archives, so that they're there for people in 100
And I was just
saying,
going to,
oh God.
I was just going to say, sorry to interrupt you, PJ, for when you, just when you mentioned oral stories there, if you do have elderly people who have great stories or remember a certain match or remember a certain time, how are you going about doing it? Obviously you have people who write in. How many words are looking for?
Yeah.
And do you offer the service of like allowing people to say it orally and you transcribing it?
That's, you couldn't have said it better. Look, would you believe I got a great story in last week from a guy called Dermot O'Brien, who was a young lad in Callan County, Kilkenny, when he was playing, obviously hurling down there, Catherine, as you know. But they were asked to go and play a juvenile football match, and none of the lads wanted to go and play. The upshot of it was they were being beaten by 20 points at half time. But the guy who was the manager noticed there was only one ball at the venue. So he said to the biggest lad on the losing team, he said, listen, the next chance you get, kick that ball out into the cornfield there beside us. It was the August time of year and the corn was nearly ripe. So when they kicked the ball out, he happened to have a penknife close to hand and the ball was punctured and it meant the game couldn't be completed. Now, that man told me the story. I wrote the story for him. I've sent it back to him. And he said, look, there's a couple little corrections there, but by and large, that's the story. So you asked a pertinent question. If a lady has come on to me saying, look, I haven't a story, but my dad has a story, a lady called Rena Campbell. And I'm going to ring her dad now today or tomorrow because he has stories he wants to tell me. And what she did was she just wrote to pj@geastories.ie.
Yep.
I got the message and I was able to get on to her dad. But similarly, if you write to communications@gea.ie, it'll go into Croke Park. And if you mark it GEA Stories, they'll come back out to myself and Alan and we'll take it from there. But, you know, it's a very good question because an awful lot of people will say, ah, I'm not up to writing that sort of stuff. Or, you know, I'm in my 60s, my 70s, or 80s. I don't feel I have the way. Look, it's telling the story. We'll put it down in words. We'll send it back to you to make sure you're happy that we have the gist of your story. And then it's there forever.
And I think, you know, what strikes a chord with me is there's so much mythology around GAA memories, and where one club might remember a match one way, another might remember it a completely different way, or one county. Do you know what I mean? So you'd have opinions and memories coming in from two different sides.
you can be sure of that. Like, you know, there's, as somebody said, there's three sides to the story. There's their club side, there's our club side, and then there's the truth. The truth will never get into this because we'll be getting very partisan stuff. Now, having said that, look, the one great thing about storytelling in the GEA is that it never loses from the embellishment that it always gets going forward a little bit. But one story, I don't know if you have time for that. One story I particularly love, and I spoke to a person who works with you sometimes called Professor Niall Moyna.
Yes.
Many years ago, when I was a reporter with the Irish Independent, I was sent up to Scotstown, where his sister, Fionnuala, was marrying John Tracy, the great runner. It was 83, and I was looking for an intro, and I said to John, can we say you exchange gold with a Monaghan woman when you're hoping to give her gold in the LA Olympics next year? And he said, grand. So I was doing that. But before I went to the church to see John, who, as we know, won the silver medal and is a brilliant Jimmy McGee gave his best ever commentary as he was coming up the straight and all that sort of thing. But I digress. But I opened the door. I knocked at the door of the Moynas house, and Tommy, who was the father, opened it. And I just told him who he was. And he says, do I detect the Midland accent there? And I said, I'm from the middle of it, Clara County, Offaly. And he pulled me in, and his late wife, Sheila, he said, Sheila, this is a man from Clara. Tommy actually served his time in D.E. Williams's in Clara when he was a young lad. He won a Leinster medal with Offaly in 1947. But he was a twin with another great guy called Maxie Moyna. And what happened was, Maxie played with Loud because he was living there, and Tommy played with Monaghan. But in the All-Ireland semi-final, Tommy got injured. His wrist got broken just before half-time. And, of course, the other guy, Maxie, was at the match. So for the second half, now they had taped it up just before half-time, but it was broken. But when it came out in the second half, it looked like Tommy was coming out to play because the same sort of taping was put on the wrist.
I love it.
Thanks to Pádraig. Thanks to Pádraig Duffy's father, Mickey, and not even Tommy and Mackie's mother and father sitting in the stand at Croke Park knew that they had been swapped at halftime. So they're the sort of stories.
I love
it. And there's a million of them out there, and we'd love to get them. And what we'll do is, anyone that gives us a story, we will put it down and it'll get into the collection. If it doesn't get into the collection, it will go into Croke Park for forever and ever. Amen.
Okay, and people can get in touch by emailing pj@gaastories.ie or communications@gaa.ie. PJ Cunningham, always lovely to chat. Thank you very much. Anish Toshe and I'm the Priev Scalton and Nuptal La Marian Nihulawan. Gurmargot Marian, lots of texts in on alopecia after I was talking to Ian and Claire there. Hi Catherine, I have alopecia universalis, which is all over body hair loss. Just as I was struggling to shave my head, thereby speeding up the super anxious process, I had a good friend help by saying, Phil, why worry about the hair you're losing? Why not liberate yourself from the hair you have? And that really helped. Catherine, I have alopecia for over 20 years now. My daughters think I'm cool. They are 9 and 7 and have donated hair 3 times to the Rapunzel Foundation, who are fantastic. They love their hair long but donated it anyway. I'm so, so proud of them, says Ethna. Can you text me the name and number of that hair company you were talking about? I just got the end of it, if you could mention it again. So yeah, I was talking to a girl called Claire Fulham, but she is Claire Balding, which I think is Gas, that's her name on Instagram. But her company is Trua, T-R-U-A, truahair.ie, and you can find out everything about what she's trying to do there. Okay, let's get going with our All-Ireland quiz. Yeah, it always sets the scene. And today it is Kildare versus Antrim. And we have Mary Carter playing for Kildare. And we have Dan Carlin playing for Antrim. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
afternoon.
Mary, I'm going to start with you in Kildare. Were you listening to the radio? Did somebody ring you? What happened?
I was listening to the radio.
Yes.
Do you mean right now for this round?
Well, when we announced it earlier on at the show, at the top of the show.
I was walking around Tesco's with my daughter, and I'm still here walking around Tesco's. We're actually standing outside Tesco with the security guard because our trolley is inside.
Oh, I love it. So you didn't get to run around and get the whole shop done. We panicked you, probably.
No, it's done.
Oh, it's done.
We're waiting to pay. I didn't want to be caught at a till while you were asking me important questions.
I love it. And what are you doing? Are you working, Mary, or...?
No, I am chilling with my daughter, and it's her birthday tomorrow, so we're just getting a few supplies in.
Oh, wow. What's your daughter's name and what age is she?
Jade is 24 tomorrow.
Lovely.
And she's a nurse.
Fab. And she's been busy then. Every nurse deserves a party.
Absolutely. And she'll have a big one, I think, tomorrow. Socially distancing, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. That goes without saying. Dan Carlin in County Antrim. How are you doing, sir?
The best, Catherine. Not too bad, thanks.
Good, good. So were you listening to the draw or did you get a phone call or what happened?
I was parking my van in Hollywood Main Street.
Right. What do you do that you're a man in a van?
I sell a bit of beef to butcher shops.
Okay, brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's great people supporting their local butchers now as well, which is always good.
Yeah, local butchers have made a great comeback during this COVID crisis.
Mm-hmm. And who are you at home on your own, Dan, or kids, or wife? Or
At home I have Daniel, the oldest, 13, John, 12, and Jane, 11.
Okay, oh, sure. And they're delighted, all off school now.
Well, say I make them cringe when I go on the radio.
Okay, well, listen, for Kildare, Mary, we need your motivational song. What's going to get you going today?
It's obviously Brown Eyed Girl, Van Morrison, As I Am One.
Let's listen. All along the waterfall with you, a brown eyed girl. I see we're all Irish today. Dan, what was your choice?
Whiskey in the Jar by Thin Lizzy. It's really for my nephew, Liam.
Okay.
He calls himself Young Ale and he likes the guitar licks.
I like it. Yes, that is a tune. Mary, you got more excited for Dan's tune than you did for your own. Okay, let's get going. We'll get a bit
good
of
luck,
atmos
good luck,
going.
Mary.
Good luck, Dan. I love your accent.
Oh, jeez, love it. Likes the man with an accent, does Mary. Okay, Mary, this one is for you. Question number one. Luanda is the capital city of which of these countries, Albania or Angola?
Can you say that again?
Luanda.
Luanda. Yeah. Angola.
Is the right answer. Well done to you. 1 point. Dan, coming to you, representing Antrim. Astana is the capital city of which of these countries? Kazakhstan or Kosovo?
I didn't hear the name of the capital.
Astana.
Astana.
Need an
Kosovo.
Answer. Is the wrong answer. It is Kazakhstan. Sorry about that, Dan. Okay, Mary, back to you. This is the audio question, and we want you to name this movie.
Hello! Cookies for sale!
Go away, I'm not home!
Yes, you are. I heard you.
You didn't. This is a recording.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
All right, Mary, what animated movie is that?
That Monster House.
No, it's not. Good guess, though. That is from Despicable Me.
Oh,
so yeah. Yeah, so you're still on 1 point. Don't worry. Coming back to you, Dan. Name this animated movie.
What? It's a compliment. Better out than in, I always say.
Well, it's no way to behave in front of a princess.
She's as nasty as you are.
You're not exactly what I expected.
Well, maybe you shouldn't judge people before you get to know them.
All right, Dan, name that animated movie.
A mad guess, Shrek.
Is the right answer. Fair play to you.
Oh.
Okay, it's neck and neck, lads. Question number three, Mary, over to you. What name is given to a female giraffe? Is it a cow, a sow, or a doe?
A cow? I think it's a cow.
Need an answer?
It's a cow.
Is the right answer. Well done you. It is a cow. I did not know that. So that's 2 points to you, Mary. Back to you, Dan. What is the name given to a male polar bear? Is it a bull, a buck, or a boar?
What, a buck or a boar? I'll guess a bull.
Oh, wrong answer, Dan. It is a boar. There you go.
Okay,
so you're still on 1 point. Mary, you're on two. For 3 points, Mary, name this band. Oh, sorry, singing away there. Off you go, Mary.
Is it Boyzone?
It is Boyzone. Great stuff. Okay, Mary, that has you on 3 points. Dan, this would get you to 2 points if you get it right. Name this band. Never forget where you're coming from. Never All right, Dan, off you go.
Westlife, I guess.
Oh, no. That is Take That.
Right.
Oh, okay. That has Dan on 1 point. And Mary, you are on 3 points. So now I'm back to you, Mary. Do you want to take the 1 point question or do you want to take the 3 point question? If you take the 1 point question, it'll have you on 4 points, which means you could end up neck and neck with Dan. Or you take the 3 point question and he can't catch you if you get it right.
A chicken and go for the 1 point.
You're going for the 1 point. Okay. The flag of Liechtenstein is blue and yellow. Is that true or false?
False.
Is the right answer, Mary.
I didn't even know that. That was a guess.
You mean you didn't know the flag of Liechtenstein off the top of your head? Okay, so that is 4 points. This means, Dan, your only option is to go for the three-pointer here to get you in for a tiebreaker. All right?
Pressure's on.
No pressure. Okay, here we go. For the tiebreaker question, which of these world cities has the biggest population? Is it Johannesburg, Madrid, Melbourne, or Brasilia?
Johannesburg, Madrid, Melbourne and Brasilia. Johannesburg, Madrid, Melbourne and Brasilia. I'll go for Johannesburg.
Oh, Dan. Unfortunately, that is the wrong answer.
All right. Dan.
Dan.
The right answer was Madrid has the biggest population at 6
million.
Well
done, Mary. Well done,
Dan, you're a sweetheart. I wanted to hear you talking more. That was all the problem with me.
Well, I wish you luck and I hope you win the whole thing.
Right. Oh, you're a sweetheart, Dan. Thank you very much.
I can keep him on the line if you like afterwards. When we get them.
I love accents because I'm married to an Englishman, but I do love the old accent up the wee northerners.
Oh, there you are.
Love
it.
It's a bad blow that you're married. See ya.
We can always change that.
In the middle of this. Mary, I have to ask you, Mary, do you like your husband's accent?
I love him. We're married 25 years. I better.
That's it. All right. A Ray Darcy mug is on its way to you, Dan. And Mary, go and collect your trolley, collect your shopping. Enjoy the party tomorrow. And whisper sweet nothings into your husband's ear. Let's get a bit of Sinead O'Connor. The beautiful, brilliant Sinead O'Connor there. I will be talking to Colin Stafford-Johnson after the break. So join me then.
Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. This Sunday evening on RTE 1, we are all in for a treat. Pretty much like we were last Sunday as well. Pure escapism. Colin Stafford-Johnson returns with the second episode in his Wild Cuba series and he's in studio. And he walked in the door. I said, look at the tan on you. You look fabulous. How have you been keeping?
Oh, you know what? I've been keeping good. And I suppose, you know, we did have that fine spell of weather during all this COVID time, didn't we?
Yes.
So there's an awful lot of people I know who never really had a suntan. They're sporting pretty nice ones now. And their sun has been shining in Westport, I have to say, a lot.
It's nice to get the good weather. And I will have to say, we do slather on the sun cream as well. That's the message that's going out there. We all have to make sure we're doing that too. So how was lockdown for you in Westport? I mean, I know a lot of work was cancelled, like a lot of us, but how did you cope? How are you coping? It's a nice place to be locked down.
It was a lovely place to be locked down. And even when you could only move 2 kilometres from home, I lived just near the grounds of Westport House. You could wander around there. They're doing a wonderful job in there these days. It's terrific. There was lots to do, really. And sure, my life didn't change a huge amount. Because our work was deemed to be an essential service, I'd already signed a contract actually with the BBC to make a film about a wildlife garden. And so I had to continue that work during COVID. So COVID for me was empty roads, but I know for a lot of friends of mine, you know, it was a time of sadness too. I know a few friends who, I know several people who succumbed to this disease. So all over that time, although it was, in one way, it's a lovely way for us to sort of get back to nature, to listen to the sounds of nature a little bit more. Also have to remember that there were people who were really suffering at that time too. Mm. So sort of mixed uh, sort of mixed feelings towards that time. Yeah.
And did you have the girls back with you, living with you in Westport?
Yes.
Have you two daughters?
Two daughters, yeah, indeed. And so they had to, one was just finishing her leaving this year and the other one is in Galway, second year in Galway College there. So she had to return home and do her exams online and all that sort of thing, which was weird, but she handled it and did it. But quite a challenge, I think, to sort of be able to study away from college and have to apply yourself to this new situation. But sure, I guess they're all in the same boat. They just had to do it and get it
and
done.
And like many families, you're sitting around the table planning as to what's next and taking every day and week at a time to see where they're going to go and what they're going to do. But listen, the show last Sunday, I have to say, it was absolutely brilliant. When it was in Cuba, when did you film it?
It was filmed sort of last year. So I guess I left there about a year ago, but Domenico Pontillo and Kira Baker had really spent the best part of a year out there, coming and going, not there all the time. You know, they'd sort of go off to renew visas in Nicaragua for a few weeks and get a bit of a break. But they were really the ones who were the boots on the ground on this project and responsible for all those lovely images on this particular program.
My role was
more of a presenter. No, really, really terrific. And, you know, Cuban wildlife does not give of itself easily, necessarily. You can watch a program like this and you think you just wander around and these things turn up. Well, not really, or not to get shots like that. Dom had to put in a lot of time, but it was worth it. He did a terrific job.
So how long were they out there getting all the banking, the footage and all of that? And how long were you out there when you came out to present?
I had about 6 weeks out there.
OK.
So enough time to go around and have a really good explorer, really, because it's a place I'd always wanted to go.
Yeah.
And I'd like to have spent more time out there, but I was sort of tied up with some other things I'd signed up to do, as is the way sometimes. But it's a place I'd always wanted to go to ever since I was a little fellow. My grandfather lived with us. It was a wonderful thing, really. He was a great collector, a real sort of Victorian type. And we had a room we called the study. It was a library with floor to ceiling books. And if there was ever a wet day or something, you could wander in there and pull a book off the shelf or an old atlas or a map and just pore over it. And I remember he had a collection. He was a philatelist, a collector of stamps. And he had a book on Cuban stamps. And I remember just looking at those, you know, the palm trees and everything seemed incredibly exotic. And I thought I'd love to go there one day. So it took me a little while. But anyway, got there eventually.
You know,
and what a wonderful place it is.
It's funny when you say that, because you actually just brought me back. My mother had an uncle, a guy called Brendan, and he used to travel around the world with a company called Travco, basically taking very wealthy Americans in bus tours all over Asia or Europe. He was the Francis Brennan kind of the day. And he used to turn up on our doorstep in Carlo with a bag. And even every time he opened, like, you'd maybe see him once or twice a year or once every couple of years. And he'd come unannounced and he'd turn up and the bag, I could still smell it. And something would come out, it would be silk or a terracotta warrior from China. And he'd sit down and might just stay one night and tell us stories of where he'd been, whether it was out of Mongolia, whether it was Egypt, wherever. And it was just, that for me was the time that my love of travel was ignited. And it was just, he was so instrumental in kind of my curiosity. So it's lovely to hear that.
It's a real thing. It's because those days there wasn't an awful lot else. You know, if it was a wet day, you had to find something to do and reading and just the whole thing. You probably have the same sense too of a globe.
Yeah.
When you have a globe on your desk and you're just flicking around it, it's just full of endless possibilities.
Yes. And that was it. I remember lying on the floor, giant atlas out and opening the big pages and, you know, putting your finger on it, where you're going to go. And of course, travel has been curtailed for lots of people. And I'll talk to you about that in a little minute if we have time. I do want to talk about the documentary that if people hadn't seen it. Talk to me about your first impressions of being in Cuba and what that was like.
Well, I suppose my first impression was really landing in Havana. And in many ways, it was quite like what I imagined it to be. Wonderful, that sort of faded grandeur. Mm. And I just loved the atmosphere of the city. It felt incredibly safe. I rather, like you, spend a good bit of time in Central America, you know, places like Nicaragua and Honduras and that sort of thing, where you'd no longer be happy walking through the streets at 1 o'clock in the morning. Mm. But in Havana, that felt wonderful. I think for people, lots of people who've been there over the years, they told me, oh, is that the food isn't up to much? All that's changed. The food in Cuba is wonderful these days. And then, of course, the big cars, those big, wonderful cars that they still have on the road. But setting off from that, the first place we went was actually heading towards the Bat Cave that was at the other side of the island. And just seeing that was something I'd always wanted to see, this idea of pythons gathering at the mouth of a cave and all these poor bats having to exit it every night. They have no choice, but they have to go through almost these fishing lines of snakes waiting to grab them out of the air.
And I loved watching you in there, because you were sitting there, as you said, I think your words were everybody's worst nightmare, and you couldn't have been happier. You're surrounded by bats and bat shit and snakes, and you were sitting in the dark going, this is heaven.
Well, it was pretty wonderful. I'm saying that now, that this particular cave was known as the hot cave, and it's a bit like, you know, when you open an oven to sort of put something in it, that hot air. Well, imagine that hot air full of sort of guano hitting your and you're there for hours. It's a very unusual situation, but it's pretty magnificent sight all the same. Yeah,
you also see woodpeckers making their homes. Woodpeckers big. I know there's a big kind of resurgence of woodpeckers here in Ireland too.
There are. The greater spotted woodpecker moved back to Ireland roughly 12 years ago, and they are found near here. I mean, you can see them down the Herbert Park. They excavate. So the kind of things that the woodpeckers are doing in Cuba is pretty much what our woodpecker does here. The wonderful things to have around, because they excavate holes in dead wood and then they leave these lovely little homes for other animals, be it birds or bats to roost in or things like that. So we had no hollow makers in Ireland, no makers of significant hollows, but we do now. It makes it's great to have them back.
What do you think, Colin, in terms of, say, somewhere like Cuba? Do you think it can stay the same? And I know it's early days yet, but in a world after COVID, when international tourism and travel picks up again, like, what's your take on it?
Well, you know, Catherine, I think if you have a country where millions of people are coming in every year, and Cubans are hoping, you know, to bring in millions of people, the ones who are fortunate enough to get there, many cruise ships arrive. What's wonderful about Cuba is you arrive right at the centre of the old city. You literally step off the boat and you're right there in the very best of it. So it's a wonderful place. You know, change is inevitable, isn't it? As people mix more. I don't know why people are always trying to sort of, trying to maybe isolate Cuba, because surely you think if you did want to change, the best thing is to engage us, because all cultures are changing. We're all merging in some way, I guess.
Do you think the whole experience, because we've heard about nature, you know, being reinvigorated, you know, being given a chance again, do you think we will have a different relationship with nature now, having gone through what we've gone through?
Well, I wonder.
Or do you think we all go back to what we've always done?
I have a feeling. I just drove up from Westport and the roads were as busy as ever. And I just thought, I saw no cyclists on my journey. And, you know, we're sort of pushed back into the way that we're living too, aren't we? The way our lives are organised. But maybe we learn something this time, and maybe some of us can learn to take a step back a little bit. I hope so.
Okay. Delighted you have that wonderful naturalist, wildlife champion, Colin Stafford Johnson, on the programme. I've watched pretty much all of his wildlife programmes on TV, but beyond doubt, Wild Cuba, the new series on Sunday night, reached new heights. Oh God, the land crabs on their migration crossing the roads on their way to the ocean to reproduce. Riveting viewing, says Liam in Cavan. Fab programme, says Colette on Cuba. Amazing wildlife, beautiful tiny hummingbird was there in 1992. Now I want to go back. And please God, one day we will, Colette. Lots more texts. I don't have time, Colin. Colin, you are fabulous. Thank you so much for the long drive. That is all for me today. Mary Wilson is next on Drive Time. Have a great afternoon.